Welcome into a Monday edition of Wager Watch. I am Doug Kazarian. Another fun show on tap. Three NBA playoff games. We'll see if the Lakers can avoid elimination again. I love a prop in that game. We'll also hit the diamond. An interesting series in baseball. I'm all over a road favorite and King Arthur on a dog. Pretty much any time LeBron James takes center stage, he's going to be in the spotlight. Thus, the marquee matchup for Monday night is the Lakers visiting the defending champion, Denver Nuggets, who also had a two-time, soon-to-be three-time league MVP. So it goes without saying, this is the matchup that I think many will be focused on, even though it's later tip than for those on the East Coast. But Nuggets are favored by 7 in this Game 5 as the Lakers finally picked up a win over Denver, staving off the sweep, and did crumble down the stretch. Now, quick turnaround from Saturday to Monday. Altitude, Lakers veterans, their stars are veterans, I should say. So you wonder about the gas tank late. But let's get there, right? First things first, we should mention Jamal Murray, the Robin to Jokic's Batman, listed as questionable. Calf strain. So that adds a layer to this, and as these series, the longer they go, things like this can happen. Now, whether that gives the Lakers a crack of the door, maybe, but they believe they can win. They finally got the win. This series could easily be 2-2. I don't think that's going on a limb and saying it. Obviously, Game 4 plays out differently if it's not 3-0, but that doesn't mean the Nuggets definitely win. Let's say it's a competitive game and whatever, and it's 2-2. I think with the Lakers up 20 in one game in Denver, other games being really close down the stretch, I don't think it's crazy to say the series isn't that far away from being 2-2. I mean, take, for example, the margin between these teams is not as wide as it seemed like compared to Minnesota and Phoenix through three games. Obviously, the Suns' best game was Game 4, yet they still lose and get swept. But I think the Lakers, I mean, look at the talent they have. They have AD and LeBron. Now, granted, they're on the back nine or really last few holes of their careers in a lot of ways. But the supporting cast is solid, not great, but the Nuggets pieces play well, and they're obviously in their peak Jokic and peak Murray. But we'll see. I think the number feels too big. 7 is too big of a line in my eyes. I think we see Lakers and I cover, and I don't think they win, but I think they cover. We've seen them really play strong to start all these games. Now, can Denver sort of figure out their funk and start with more tenacity and desperation? Maybe they should, obviously off an actual loss, as opposed to getting away with slow starts and then winning at the end, should lead to a change of the first quarter, first half performance. But I think the Lakers veterans, their gas tanks fuller, right? LeBron and AD are sharp in the first quarter and first half, and then things, struggle down the stretch, although LeBron got help. He was fine in some of those games in Denver. So it was really the supporting cast like D'Angelo Russell did not play well in games 1 and 3, played great in 2 and 4. Things like that. You need more consistency from the supporting cast. And that is where the gap was really between Denver and the Lakers. And obviously, Jokic is just Jokic. Zigzag theory. That applies here. Now, what is the zigzag theory? I've talked about it a few times. It is, and there's different versions of this. Some people just think you just alternate, you bet on the team that come off a straight up loss. It's not as simple as that. You bet on the team if the situation presents itself, and that situation is the home team or the favorite. Sometimes it's both, off a loss. So in this case, Denver is off an outright loss, and they're home, okay? And they're obviously favored by 7 here. So the conventional tool of betting would say bet on Denver. Now, these playoffs so far, it's only 4-4 against the spread. 2 of those ATS losses are the Suns, but 4-4, not great. Lakers in Game 3 was a bet-on situation because they were the home team off a loss. Did not get there, obviously. Game 4 did. So 1-1 and the zigzag applying to this series. So I still think Denver's the right side. I'm not willing to pull the trigger on it, but I do think the talent gap is not a 7-point spread, even at Denver. Like, I just don't think Lakers they have the talent. They have the roster. It's just some of the execution. They've made mistakes. Nobody's shooting that great in terms of either team from 3, but I think the Lakers. I think the Lakers cover. So it's at least a lean. I lean under as well. But that's where I sit on this game. It's a tough one to handicap, but that's where I sit. Playoff games, national television leads to higher handle, therefore we understand and want to address that. Primetime plays, the Celtics at the Heat. Boston, after a surprise loss in Game 2, hammer the Heat in Game 3, get back on track, cover as a road favorite. The line basically got to 10. Game 4, 10.5. Miami, and home underdog again. That's where actually they've struggled. I was as surprised as I've ever been reading a stat. 1-10 against the spread at home as a dog this season. That is surprising, given Eric Spoelstra, how I have him in such high regard. And anytime you think they're catching points, that they're great, but they've been shorthanded a lot of the season. Maybe just one of those things. And, you know, the culture maybe took, it did take a while this season to get going just because they played so late in the last season going to the finals. So still no Jimmy Butler, still no Terry Rozier, but they got Tyler Hero back, as we know, you know, a handful of games ago. So this team has some stretches where they could score. We saw that in Game 2, made 23 three-pointers in the game. So that's just a ridiculous amount, shot over 50%. I mean, you're going to win games if you do that. I don't care how shorthanded you are. Three is better than two. That's the Celtics. Obviously, they're chucking threes, but you know, you just don't expect that from Miami and these Miami players, right? Some of these guys are making. So here we are with a 7-point, excuse me, 10.5-point line. It's Boston or pass for me. The situation, the spot of the zigzag theory, which is an old betting tool, it says to bet on Miami. They are the home team off an outright loss. It's only 4-4 so far in these playoffs. I'm not rushing to bet the Heat right now. I do think they have a huge coaching edge. I do think, you know, they have the makings of a strong team that could keep this within 10.5. But I don't think the home court matters that much. I think this Boston team doesn't fear the Heat. There's no Butler there, given what happened last year. Not having Butler is the key. And I think there's a swagger to Boston. Like, they haven't even played that great. Porzingis has had some troubles, particularly Game 2. So, you know, as I look at some of these stats and things like that, I think Boston covers this easily. I sent out an alert in Game 3. I saw what I needed to see right away. First time out, I bet the game under, the team total under for the Heat, and then the Celtics minus, you know, at that time, it was in-game line of 12.5. I just felt like it was a banger. And it ended up being, although, you know, he made things interesting for the 12.5. I think the Celtics just have too much firepower, and I don't think Miami's sort of, whether it be the zone or other things that Spoelstra's doing, can disrupt the Celtics enough that they don't cover this line. I mean, it's a big number to lay on the road. Heat are highly regarded, but they're still the 8 seed, and they're playing without their best player. Like, let's keep that in mind. So if last year didn't happen, and the Heat didn't bounce the Bucks, or Tatum doesn't get hurt in the first quarter of that Game 7, the Celtics go to the finals, like, would we be this scared of the Heat? So I'm not that afraid of this Miami team, and I think that 1-10 home underdog stat shows you something. But they're using that double-digit home underdog, so that, keep that in mind. Sometimes they're 2 or 3. Remember, this team had lost like 11 straight, I want to say, at one point in January. So this team's been shaky all year. I have high regard for Spoelstra, as I alluded to. It gives me a little concern, but it's Celtics or pass for me. Maybe a Miami Heat team total. I mean, this is a pretty low total if you're looking at like 95-ish, 96-ish. So 96, 96 and a half. So I'm not in a rush to bet. That's not a lot of points, but the Heat team does have trouble scoring. Celtics are very good defensively, and they're not messing around. I think the Game 2 taste is still in their mouth, having blown that lead. So I think the Celtics come to play in this one. I really do. Well, this is certainly an odds adjustment for Game 4 as the Thunder are looking to sweep the Pelicans. Game 3, New Orleans was a 1-point home favorite or dog, depending on when you bet it. And now we have the Thunder as a 5-point road favorite in Game 4. What's interesting is that Minnesota and Phoenix were just in this situation, and the Suns got the late steam and closed as a favorite, and like as high as like 1.5, 2. So it's interesting that the Thunder are trickling up, and this is a 1-8 matchup. Now, I know the Suns are highly regarded and things like that, but this Thunder team put on an absolute clinic in Games 2 and 3. Really, Game 3 was more impressive. It was on the road. You think Pelicans, you think sort of just like the bounce back spot, kind of like Orlando in Game 3, although Orlando even the series 2-2. I was very impressed with the Thunder. You know, a lot of people, maybe myself included a little bit, have been writing off the Thunder and even the T-Wolves, just thinking they're sort of too young. Let's wait to the playoffs. and also the defending champs with the MVP in the Western Conference as well. But statistically, analytics-wise, all season, Minnesota and OKC elite. And you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to really dethrone the one seed, although the Nuggets are the defending champs, I get it. But this OKC team is solid. Now, Pelicans are shorthanded. No Zion Williamson still in this series, so that's a bummer. But OKC has, you know, they're very good. They're very good, if you haven't noticed. SGA, obviously, is the straw that stirs the drink. He's the MVP finalist. But Jalen Williams and Holmgren are players. And Ingram has really struggled this series. I thought he was more of an automatic bucket than he has been in this series. Now, Lu Dort, some of these other guys, Cason Wallace, they're excellent defenders. I get it. But I thought Ingram, with his size and height, has got Durant-ish qualities on offense. But one thing about this Pelicans team is they're a little shaky at home or in close games. Like, I don't trust them. Like, during the regular season, they were excellent as, like, an 8-point favorite. They'd blow them out with, like, 20. That's not the case here. So they're actually, they have the best road record in the NBA. Home, one game above 500, and that includes the playoffs, and one game under 500 against the spread. But again, regular season, this team was shorthanded. Ingram missed a bunch of time. It's hard to use some of these season-long stats in the playoffs because it's all matchup-driven. And I think the Thunder, I thought, really were at a disadvantage in the middle. I thought Valanciunas had too much size from Holmgren, and that is, but it's like, okay, what is he going to score, 50? Because Holmgren just runs it right back and bombs a three, or, you know, challenges shots. And so they've been playing Nance more, they being the Pelicans, over Valanciunas, just because he's quicker and can move more and stay with Holmgren more, and he provides other things on offense. And Valanciunas, you know, they're not going through him on offense. So I just think New Orleans, the one concern I have, because I do lean to OKC, and I might bet him too, but the one concern I have is the Pelicans have players who aren't going to fold. That's my thought process. Like, some of their role players, whether it be Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, even CJ and Ingram, I don't think they're going to fold and just kind of like 1-2-3 Cancun, like we always hear, or 1-2-3 Galveston, as Charles Barkley could say. I just think they're going to fight to the end. So the question is, do the Thunder have that maturity to run through the tape, push through the finish line, and get the sweep, rather than be a little complacent like, hey, you know, we got our one in New Orleans, let's go back home and take care of business? Because it takes a lot to finish a sweep off, and we saw that with Minnesota. Anthony Edwards was a difference maker down the stretch. I just wonder if the Thunder can do that. I think they can. I think they're deep enough. They're very well coached, and they can put on a little bit of a clinic again. So I'll lay it. But five's a fairly big number. This isn't a pick 'em anymore. All right, time to give a little props, and that's when we discuss prop bets. And we're focusing on the NBA playoffs and, you know, the point spread, the game within the game. The player prop is really the game within the game. So one guy I've been focusing on a little bit is Jonas Valanciunas, the big man for the New Orleans Pelicans. But right now, the books are not putting up his rebounds or points or anything because he only played 12 minutes in Game 3. And there's an adjustment, like Larry Nance played 29 minutes, and you get the feeling that New Orleans is shifting to sort of small ball. Nance is going to replace Valanciunas because he gives him more flexibility on defense and can do some more things from an agility perspective on offense. And I'm very disappointed because I was looking to hammer the Valanciunas under. I bet over Game 2. We didn't get there. After in Game 1, he went 13 points, 20 rebounds. And he nearly, I think if they had played down the stretch, they maybe win that game. And so now they're going away from him. I think odds makers obviously got smarter about it. And that's a bummer because I had a feeling they were going to go to Nance. And I was hoping he'd have another rebound prop of like 11.5 or something like that. So, you know, we'll see what they post game day. Maybe these numbers are posted when the starting lineups are announced. And if they announce Valanciunas starting, I think you still bet the unders because he only played 12 minutes and started in Game 3. I don't think they're going to put something up because they don't know how long he's going to play and things like that. It's pretty obvious. If he's only going to get 12 minutes, you want to hammer these under 11.5 and whatnot. But and then even play with the over for Nance because he had 13 rebounds with that extended playing time in Game 3. So something to keep in mind. It's worth mentioning because you don't know what's going to happen throughout the course of the day and the hours leading up to tip-off. But I feel like odds makers sort of figured this one out. Let's go to another game on Monday, and that's Game 5, with the Lakers at the Nuggets as LA avoided the sweep. Series now shifts to Denver. And Anthony Davis has been a machine. He's had some really impressive numbers throughout this series, but for the most part, has been non-existent or a ghost in the fourth quarter, and whether that's fatigue setting in because he's, you know, getting up there in years and whatever. But I think we can skew the numbers a little bit and see some, get some line value in the first quarter. So his rebound prop in the first quarter, now there's a few of them. There's 4.5 plus money, but I like the alternate at DraftKings, 3.5 over -180. Now, you might think that seems like a little steep, but -180 is like in the 65% range, because -200 would be 66. So -180 is about 64%, 60, whatever it is. I'm doing my math in my head, but you get the picture. I think he's like very likely to get 4 rebounds or more. It's just because what happens is if he's fading, especially in altitude, 48-hour turnaround or less than 48 hours, I think we see an active AD in the first half, definitely the first quarter, but not so much maybe in the second half. So I also know the substitution pattern matters a lot, because some guys, they stagger the stars and they get, like, LeBron sits some in the first quarter, starts the second, things like that. AD plays typically the entire first quarter. Maybe he'll sub out with like a minute to go. But for the most part, you're getting the entire time. So that's key, because there's these props are of the first quarter. So I would bet over, or I am betting over 3.5 rebounds in the first quarter for Davis in game 5, -180. I'll lay the juice just for perspective. What he's done in the first 4 games of the series, 3 in game 1, 5, 6, and 6. You know, he's quite likely to get 4. Now, game 1 was weird, you know, whatever, right? But there's a lot of cheapy rebounds out there, whether it be off the free throw miss. Both teams aren't really shooting that great in this series. And I just think he can get some garbage, like a tip-in is a rebound, and then obviously a basket. So I think it's a very good play if you're getting him all those minutes. Jokic subs out, things like that. Like, I think there's an edge here. Like, I think the line should be, like, -250 at over 3.5. So a little bit of line value. Let's not go crazy when you're laying a bunch of juice, but it's still a play for me. Yes, the man is in the house. King Arthur's court, and King Arthur with his regal pillow and no crown, though. He's got to win 2 in a row, and he lost his last pick. So we need to go back-to-back before he gets the white crown. If he wins 3 or more in a row, the red crown is his. Ooh, he's standing up. This is a rarity. So Arthur, he's a sharp dog player, as we know, and he's going to the diamond. He likes Chicago Cubs on the road. Cubs have been one of the biggest surprises this year in all of baseball. Jameson Taillon, their pitching staff's been surprisingly awesome. And Taillon, he's only had 2 starts, started the season late, but he's been great. And this guy had all the talent in the world, why the Yankees went and got him for a stint. Former number 2 overall pick, behind Bryce Harper and ahead of Manny Machado. So he had the goods back in the day, but obviously that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great pitcher. But it's nice to see he's coming into his own. He's had some good stretches originally before the Pirates, but I think he's found a home with the Cubs. Now, they're a short dog because they're facing the Mets, who have Luis Severino on the bump. Severino's been great so far this year. He did give up 3 earned in his last outing. He has faded. Now, it's obviously still really early in the season, but I don't believe in Severino. I think the strong start so far is more of a fool's gold, and I don't believe in him. So I will, or Arthur doesn't. So this is his way of getting his back scratched. He likes to face away from the camera a few times. And actually, for those who watch a lot, it's usually a sign that he's going to win. It's like the groundhog thing. So we'll get him to turn around when he stops scratching. So Arthur's going to ride with the Cubs, +115 at the Mets. Cubbies have been, again, pitching's been great. They've had timely hitting, and they're a hot team. I think they might be good this year. So Arthur's going to grab the extra candy, the plus money with the Cubbies. What's the move is the question. Hopefully I have the answers for you. And we're talking baseball as we hit the diamond. And I don't want to use the word avenge, as the Dodgers are trying to avenge a postseason series sweep by the Diamondbacks, because it's apples and oranges when you're comparing a postseason and a regular season matchup. But this is the first time the Blue Crew is getting to face Arizona since that sweep, 3-game sweep in last year's playoff series, and you have to think the Dodgers at least want to get up for this matchup. So LA is a $1.45 road favorite here. D-backs haven't quite delivered like they did last year, but it's obviously very early in the baseball season. We're only in April. Dodgers lead the baseball in runs, lead all of baseball in runs, I should say. Diamondbacks second in runs, but it's the pitching that is the gap in why the Dodgers are in first place, and Arizona is a few spots back. But I want to talk about the pitching matchup. So first things first, Dodgers are facing a lefty, and they've been really good against lefties so far this season. Obviously, they've been good against all both lefties and righties, but they're eighth in batting average, and then their OPS, which is on-base percentage plus slugging percentage, is .752. That's also eighth in all of baseball. And I picked the averages, those two, as opposed to like home runs and RBIs, because the Dodgers have just faced lefties more. So obviously the home runs, the things that are just totals, would be skewed in LA's favor and wouldn't be really indicative. But eighth in all of baseball in terms of batting average and OPS. So that certainly bodes well. Dodgers turning to James Paxton, who's been really solid this year, as well as you could have envisioned in pitching. So last time out, he threw 89 pitches, but did not get through five. 4 2/3, only gave up one earned, had some trouble with some three walks, but he still threw about 90 pitches. 95 pitches in the previous outing against the Padres, three earned. But in the previous two outings, he had five shutout ball against San Francisco and two earned runs against Minnesota. So he's pitched pretty well, an ERA of a little over 2.5. So that's as well as you could have hoped for. And then obviously that Dodgers offense. So I like the Dodgers in this spot. I think excellent hitting, obviously the lineup's there with the studs at the top of it. And then Paxton gives you enough. Now, for whatever reason, I think it's the atmosphere of the ballpark. Dodgers always feel like the pitchers seemingly, in my eyes, and I should probably get some stats to back up, always feel shaky in Arizona, just the gaps. And I think the crowd is really strong there when it's a division rival. So I certainly understand the sweep from last year, but because the Dodgers have previously celebrated that Arizona pool in the outfield. But I think it's a good spot to back the Dodgers. $1.45 feels cheap. I think I had this line more like $1.80, but maybe it's just the home field advantage thing for Arizona, obviously, when you're not just the crowd and everything, but you have a competitive advantage because of the last outs, or it's not last ups, I should say. So that's one thing I want to keep in mind. Some props aren't posted for one pitcher I've talked about in the past, but I want to at least dive into it. It's Ryan Pepio. He's a former Dodger, was in the James Paxton trade, actually. Actually, not the Paxton trade, one of the other trades with Tampa. So Pepio's going for the Tampa Bay Rays, and he's been excellent. I discussed it the last time I mentioned him. He got roughed up in his first outing of the year, gave up six earned. Okay, that happens. But then only one outing since more than an earned run. So he's been great. He's settled down, can rack up the strikeouts. He had 11 in one game, but he's also had he only had four in his last game. So I don't want to bet strikeout prop. I want to bet the total outs. Usually they're around 15.5. So if he can get one out into the sixth, then he's usually good for an over. And he's done that in four of his five starts this year. So I think Pepio is going to be this one of his guys. I think there's line value right now. I don't think he's a big name. And I think we can get some line value. So again, he was the key part that Dodgers Rays trade in the offseason. And he's delivered for Tampa. Just that lineup has struggled, and Rays just got swept by the White Sox. Imagine that. And I think it's a good spot to bet. I'm not going to bet Tampa. I want to isolate. I talk about this a lot. There's so many props out there, so many ways to bet baseball and all these other sports. I'd rather just trim the fat, isolate the bet I want, and just focus on that. So I want to bet on Pepio pitching well. I don't need their offense. Now, if you bet the Rays and Pepio gets rocked, you at least have the chance to win like 6-5. But I'd rather just bet Pepio to pitch well because I'm more confident in that than the garbage, win if he doesn't pitch well, things along those lines. I get it. It can work itself out in the long run, but I'm going to keep riding this Pepio train until he burns me.